That's the wrong one.
Yep. Hi, Steve and Barbara. Hi, everybody. So nice to be back with you again on the Virtual Light broadcast this month for October. How did that happen? I don't know where September went. I think most of us feel that way. So let's get into my piece. There's a lot that I want to cover. I'm going to refer to my notes quite a bit because there is a lot of research in this that I want to be able to report correctly. So it's called Are Humans Sustainable? So what does that mean? Well, recently I discovered that a local farm that I shop at a lot, weekly, sometimes a couple of times a week, has moved their status from organic to CISA. And what CISA stands for is Community Involved in Sustainable Agriculture. So what does that mean? If you were to look that up in the dictionary, it says that sustainable farming forgoes the use of synthetic pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers to produce food. Instead, farmers will plant a variety of plants together to promote biodiversity and ward off pests and pathogens. So it's taking a more natural approach with a direct relationship with nature, isn't it? So we know from the yield of the crops over and over that nature is happy. The soil is nutrient dense and rich. It promotes a healthier crop, and that creates more loyal and healthier customers, doesn't it? So if we were to take our cue from nature about how they farm and how this crop yields, how would we begin to consider and apply that to humanity? How could we create a community involved in sustainable humans? It would have to look rather similar, wouldn't it? So let's break that down a little bit. We would need to forego everything we think we know about people, about race, about gender, about geography, and begin to come together just as the plants do in a variety of ways and in a rotation of ways. And the end result would be what? In nature, that's to ward off pests and pathogens. So who are the pests and the pathogens for humanity? Well, they are anyone or anything, as in company or institution, through any form of enterprise that want to keep humans sick, afraid, poor, isolated, depressed, medicated, unwelcome, unemployed. It's a pretty big list. So in the same way that social media can be a breeding ground for fake news, and even worse, constant bickering. I'm watching this constant bickering going on, even in spiritual communities, over what the truth is and who knows the truth, one person versus another person, causing all this arguing back and forth. Is that really sustainable for humans? Does that kind of interaction unite us or divide us? And again, these are in spiritual communities. I found that rather interesting, kind of disturbing, kind of like we should know better. So one of those examples recently has been, there's been so much talk about Greta Thunberg and her visit to New York City, her address to the United Nations. It is all over social media. It is all over the news. It is absolutely riveting. It makes you feel a lot of things. It makes you question, you know, the adults who are making these decisions and why a 16-year-old is being looked at as a leader when, you know, the leaders are not leading. And yet she's so compelling and emotional. She's emotional. That is key. I will tie that in later on as to why this has such an impact. But there's these stories going around. The latest I heard was that she's a paid actor being backed by Bill Gates and the elite in order to create this false anger and fear around, you know, fake climate change. And I can't even. If that is your position, then I honor your position, but it is not my position. So if I post something on my wall about Greta Thunberg, somebody coming over to tell me what's what, that says that isn't really engaging me in anything sustainable, are they? So where does that come from? How does that work? What is trying to be achieved there? Okay, let's move on. So what happens on social media, and I know that Steve has talked about this before, I know it's been in classes. If you have not seen the film The Great Hack, you absolutely must. It is available on Netflix if you have a Netflix subscription. If not, I'm sure you can rent it online from places that you rent films online. It is an absolute must-watch film because in that film, they show you through whistleblowers from Cambridge Analytica how they successfully, repeatedly broke apart any kind of human sustainability by isolating a concept and generating false data around it and then massively circulating it through social media, influencing millions of people through ads and questionnaires and things that would engage you and your opinion. And then they would track that influence, so tracking your responses, so as to predict it and package it all up as a service, a human manipulation service for hire. The film is terrifying because they show us that we may never again be able to discern the truth of anything that we read on social media ever again. However, what if we chose this as part of the game? Maybe not the speeding up of the timeline and the impact that we're having, moving and shortening that timeline so drastically, but there was always at some point a timeline. We've heard Steve and the group talk about this. But what if we were always, as a species, going to have to go through a process of finding our sustainability as a species, as part of our expansion experience? What if we had the choice collectively to do this, you know, lovely, easy, graceful way, or the more challenging way? And collectively, we rose up and chose the challenge. It reminded me of when you're playing a good game of Monopoly when you're a kid, and all of a sudden, you know, your opponent is, you know, picking up speed, and they're buying up hotels, and they're putting them all over their properties, and you're rolling the dice, and you know if you land on any of their property, your rent is tripled. It's going to bankrupt you, and so you're, you know, it's a crapshoot. You're hoping you're going to roll those double sixes to get right past them in the game, and then pass go, and then collect $200, so you keep sort of winning. But it's challenging and it's hard and you've got a lot of opposition. But would the game be as interesting if it wasn't? If it was just sort of an easy opponent? Would we have set up that kind of separation in order to find our connection and biodiversity again? Interesting to ponder, isn't it? So everyone has this wise voice within them. That's what we're being called upon, our inner skill set, to begin to really trust that. Because what you read and what you see and what you hear may or may not be coming from a source of truth or someone else's truth or potentially fake news. But in here and in here, your discerning ability is coming online. So it has great service to you. All of this has great service to you if you decide to start to look at it a little differently for yourself, not for anyone else, not to try to tell anybody else anything. We'll come to that soon enough. If you watch nature, there is an organization to nature, and anyone who works with nature really recognizes that. The scientists are the first to say that's what they study. They study the organization of nature. There is etiquette. There are manners, so to speak. Nature has manners. The black-eyed Susan plant doesn't try to pretend to be an oak tree. It also recognizes that it's not going to swat the bee away that's coming to pollinate. It knows that it requires mobile animals. It requires other species for its own survival, cross-pollination, the birds eating part of it, and in other areas will then leave droppings, and that black-eyed Susan gets to expand and gets to grow in another area. We need each other. Nature recognizes that within itself. Humans haven't come to that conclusion yet, so far. So how would we begin to do that? How would we as humans assist our own and one another's expansion? So as I dug deeper into the research and I investigated things, I discovered some fascinating pieces that really made me think and start to tie some things together. The first is studying the brain. Our left hemisphere is responsible for language and speech and other things like analytical thinking and math and science. When we hear someone speak, we hear it through our ears, and then it enters into our auditory sensors. It travels to it's called the Wernicke area of the brain, which then also travels to the Broca part of the brain. And between the two of them, it creates this bundle of neurons and this information loop going back and forth. And that's all going on in the left hemisphere. Scientists have found that this actually is there for deaf people as well. It is not about just auditory sound. It is about each individual human's primary way of communicating. The left hemisphere is very smart. The right hemisphere is responsible for our spatial cognizance. It's responsible for our intuition. It's responsible for this holistic way of thinking, of creativity and insight and the arts. So the right hemisphere doesn't have the capability of language, but it has the capability of connection and expansion and dreaming and fantasy play. So the right hemisphere is where we go in meditation. It's a very delicious space to just sort of investigate and let go and be who we are. You can kind of leave your body as you sort of enter in and play in the right hemisphere. So it's, you know, it's the woo side of the brain, isn't it? The left brain, we have this crossover. The left brain controls the right side of the body, and the right hemisphere controls the left side of the body because they crisscross at the brain stem through this bundle of nerves and neurotransmitters and the nervous system, which connects in through the spinal cord. Here's what I thought was interesting. 9 of every 10 people are right hand dominant. So they are left brain thinkers, right? So that leaves 1 out of every 10 who's a lefty, who's more dominant to be creative first, more artistic and so forth. What does that say about the collective? The collective incarnated souls on the planet right now, 9 out of every 10 is right hand dominant, left brain dominant, analytical thinking, speech. So stay with me. How do plants communicate? Plants, when scientists monitor them, are discovering that they emit these chemicals that are dopamine-like. It makes you feel good. This dopamine, as far as plants go, it's to lure in. So the black-eyed Susan would emit this chemical that would be very intoxicating and inviting to the bees and to the birds, so that it is working with its own survival. It's calling in who's going to help it, right? And we are seeing all kinds of things on social media about the trees talking to each other. I've done pieces before about your energy in nature and how that works back and forth, that conversation that you're having. But how they talk to themselves are through these chemical releases that are very dopamine-like. This is also why being in nature makes us feel so good. We're taking that in. And dopamine to us is like an aphrodisiac. It's a feel good. It makes us feel really good and happy and positive, and it engages the right brain. Here's why. Dopamine is a chemical neurotransmitter created at the base of the brain. It's in the region called the substantia nigra. That's it's tissue on either side of the base of your brain, but it's right in the middle brain, the middle path. Okay. So in a study performed by the Royal Horticultural Society, researchers discovered that talking to your plants really does help them grow faster. We knew this, but did you know this? They also found that plants grow faster to the sound of a female voice rather than the sound of a male's voice. They still grow to the sound of a male's voice, but they grow faster, larger, and healthier to the sound of a female's voice. How fascinating is that? Why? Because the sound of a woman's voice emits more emotion. Remember, Greta, emotional. I'm coming to that. It's so intensely important because the right side of the brain is home to our emotions. It's home to our intuition. It's home to our creativity. Plants respond to the right hemisphere. How do we talk to each other? Left hemisphere. The right brain identifies and the left brain interprets. Starting to put some of that together. So what are those interpretations based upon? They're based on traveling neurons that cross over the corpus callosum, the center between the two hemispheres from right to left. It's during this travel that all of our doubt and fear starts to dominate. As we move, as we shift from the right brain into the left brain, we try to stuff all of our creativity into a small, limiting interpretation that we have access to. Expanded thinking shrinks into limiting analogy and language. In other words, we, as a human species, to be sustainable, need to learn to communicate differently. Differently to ourselves, differently to each other, and differently to nature in order to become sustainable, don't we? Don't you notice that when you spend a day quietly by yourself, you're not on the phone, you're not in a lot of conference calls, it's just you. You go into this expanded state. Even when you're working, you're getting things done, but there's a sense of peace within you. There's a sense of happiness within you. It's only when you have to start to engage with others, right, that it starts to collapse, doesn't it? And we think it's about the content that we're talking about. It could be, because that's where analytical mind is. But really, it's because you have to leave. You may be working on something that's requiring your left brain to be engaged. It's interpreting, but it's the right brain that's still taking everything in. And you can absolutely be working, feeling all this inspiration coming through, having the right brain engaged and only using the left brain to be writing it down or, you know, calculating it. You know how engaged you are to the right or to the left based on how you're feeling. And the moment you open your mouth, it betrays you, doesn't it? You can have a coworker come over, how are you doing? And the first autopilot response out of your mouth isn't, I'm fantastic. It's, I'm all right. It's Monday or whatever happens. But the moment we go into full-on engagement of our left hemisphere and our limited analytical interpretive thinking, we start to bring our energy down. We start to become less emotional, less engaged, and we start to talk to each other with content that's less than, you know, lighting us up. Whereas if you're left alone, at least for me, this has been my experience, when I'm just working by myself, quietly, things flow faster, things come easier. I feel a sense of ease with it. When I have a day that requires a lot of communicating, a lot of going back and forth, a lot of meetings online or conferencing or things, it's a different energy. And it requires more effort to stay coming back into that expanded state where you feel more positive about the world, about yourself, about life. So I'm not knocking the left hemisphere. It's incredibly brilliant and it's very valuable. I wouldn't be able to be talking to you right now without it. I wouldn't be able to have had all these cognitive thoughts to put this together in order to talk to you without it. But our right brain is what engages our daydreaming and our what ifs. Are we more sustainable? What if we all started to become a little more right brain dominant, a little more left-hand dominant? We'd perhaps stop our bad manners on social media. You know, there's a lot of arrogant thinking and responses from ego on social media. How many times have you, well-meaning, of course, responded to someone's post thinking that you were going to teach them something, right? We all do it. It's meant from a good place, but are we really honoring their post? Are we really staying focused on what they're sharing? Or are we hijacking? Are we chiming in and making it about ourselves? Are we complaining about something? Are we trying to tell them they're wrong about something? Well, that's their wall. They can say whatever they feel and share whatever they want. And if you don't agree with it, drive on by. What makes us sustainable as a species? If we start to think of how those farmers plant, planting plants that are biodiversible and rotating them around requires us to get along with one another better, doesn't it? It requires us to honor each other a little better. Stop looking at countries like we are separate. So if you know my work, you know that I teach and preach and try my best to walk every day this practice of self first. So we can keep, you know, creating from the outside in by looking at the world and seeing everything that's wrong with it and telling everyone what they're doing wrong, or we can create from the inside out and we can shift ourselves first. And we can start to be a more sustainable human by making just a few adjustments. Just a few adjustments that you are aware of what you're doing when you're doing it. Consciousness is in the right hemisphere, isn't it? If you just remember nature, if you remember that the flower isn't jealous or angry at the tree, nature doesn't try to tell anyone they're right or they're wrong. That flower isn't interested in what's going on with the oak tree. It is really just interested in being its biggest and brightest and reaching up for the sun and breaking through that soil and then growing strong and having a community and drawing in those mobile animals that will help it survive and grow and expand. That's the flower's experience, isn't it? And each of us could consider ourselves as a flower, couldn't we? We're all part of one another, but if we only communicate through our left hemispheres and not our middle brain, not our emotional center first, if we don't first check in with ourselves before responding to anything, then we're missing grand opportunities, aren't we? To develop our inner skills. Remember, if we chose the game this way, why? What are we developing? How is it serving us? Why would we do that? Sustainable farmers have caught on to this. And it's extraordinary, this extraordinary intelligence in this partnership with nature. The plants are showing them that when they're planted together and rotated, they begin to form circles. They protect the group as a whole. They change their chemical emittance to include the entire garden. How about that as humans? They do this so that they can ward off those predators as a whole. So one flower can be strong. It can communicate with the others. And if everyone is on board from different species planted together, they become one unit. And the garden then wards off the predators and the pests, and they thrive. But they make adjustments in order to do that. We as humans can follow that blueprint. We as humans have the blueprint for what we need to do. It requires us to come together. It requires us to create circles. It requires us to change our emittance of our emotions, our change of words from words to emotion, which we know everyone responds to in their right hemisphere. It's why people like Greta are so engaging. It's why when we hear her speak, parts of us, I mean, I cried. I cried when I listened to her at the United Nations. I felt every syllable she said. It's why we respond, and it's what makes us want to connect and come together and create a whole garden, a human garden. The individuals in the industries who, you know, want to keep you sick and afraid and isolated and angry and depressed and so on, they won't succeed when we come together, when no one feels isolated or alone, when we stop trying to tell everyone else how to be or what's right and what's wrong, and instead we each make adjustments within ourselves to make room for the community. It's nature's way. If we would take our cue from nature, we already have a sustainable blueprint for humanity, if we choose it. And I really believe this is where we're going. And how perfectly perfect is it that our own brains show us the path, that path back to wholeness, that midbrain where our emotions reside, that are inspired through our right hemisphere and interpreted through our left as we bring everything back together, as we learn to rely on this inner skill set that we already have within us. How perfectly perfect is it that we can do this? And I truly believe that we can. It brings us back into oneness, whatever that looks like for you. And so with that, I will turn it back to you in the studio. Thank you for the extra time. I wish each of you a fantastic month ahead. I hope to see you in Las Vegas. I will be presenting in Las Vegas as well, October 19th through the 21st at the Master Healer Seminar. I cannot wait to hear what Steve and Barbara and the group have to teach. I've had a sneak peek at the workbook and it is dynamite, and we're gonna have a lot of conversations with the clans. And I hope to talk more about, since it's a healing seminar, I think I'm going to go down the route of the origins of the healers and the origin of magic that we know from the history of humanity, and really bring it into how we bring that back online now. Tie it in with the master healers that are in training for those 3 days. So I really hope to see you there. And if you're still thinking about it, there is still some space left. We're running out of a little bit of room at this point. But if you're still thinking of coming, I really hope you choose to. It's going to be extraordinary. And I'll turn it back to you in the studio. Thank you so much and have a wonderful rest of your show. Bye for now.